Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Echo by CSE Soc Media. My name is Michael and we're joined by Leo and Dylan today.
Hey guys, my name is Leo and I'm a first year comp sci student.
Hi guys, I'm Dylan, I'm a first year computer science and engineering student.
And I'm Michael once again, and I'm an aerospace engineering and computer science student. Today, we have a very special guest that will be joining us. His name is John Weishart, a former UNSW graduate now currently working at a company called Candid Health in Seattle in the USA. Now, please welcome John to our interview today.
Hey, what's going on?
How's it going?
Hey, John. It's great. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet y'all too.
How are you today?
Doing great. I'm back in Sydney at the moment, so hanging out, kind of seeing old friends. It's been a really good time.
Have you ever had like a Zoom meeting like this before, or is it just like a podcasting interview?
I have never done like any kind of interview thing like this before, so it's kind of it's a fun time. Like when Mike reached out, I was like, oh yeah, this will be like a fun experience.
Yeah, honestly, it's a first for me, at least. I don't know about...
I think for all of us.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so our first question for you today is that we know that you are working overseas at a company called Candid Health. So could you just give a bit more detail about what your role is, what you do there?
Yeah, for sure. So technically, my like title is founding engineer. And what that means is like, I'm basically just like a full stack engineer, but I joined the company when it was pretty small. And so I'm kind of like part of the founding team, although like not my idea, I guess. And so on the day-to-day though, I'm mostly like a front-end dev. So kind of working with a couple of other folks to build out our like front-end app for the company.
So what made you become like a front-end rather than like a back-end?
Yeah, I feel like when I like worked a couple of jobs just like kind of all over the place and kind of gravitated towards front end. Honestly, like part of it was that I was like really bad at math in uni. And I failed a bunch of math courses. I like didn't want to do algorithms. And like, I don't know, I personally find a front end dev a little bit like more straightforward because it's like less like algorithmic, like math focused and more like design focused.
Yeah, that's
and
so good.
More, like,
and that's
creative
so
like that.
Yeah, I know we got like, I know a lot of people who like, they like algorithms and like calculating things, but I think it's also really important to have like good UI skills because that's what the end user interacts with. They're not going to really like give like a feedback on an app based on like whether the algorithm's good. They're going to tell like the developer whether the user interface is easy to use and enjoyable.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel like in another life I could have been like a designer, but like I'm also not like quite good enough at design for that. And so doing front end dev is like a good mix of like sometimes there's some back end stuff. Like I said, I'm like kind of full stack, but at least right now I'm like mostly focused on front end.
Oh, okay, sure. So this web app like system that you're working at Candid Health, could you tell us a bit more about what the app actually does and what it's meant for and whatnot?
Yeah, for sure. So in the US, the like public or like the health insurance and like system, just generally like healthcare is like pretty different to how it is in Australia. And there exists, so like if you're a doctor and you want to get paid for like seeing a patient, there are like lots of different insurance companies that exist, and the doctor has to submit a claim to like the specific insurance company that the patient like belongs to, and there's like thousands of insurance companies, like so many different types. And so there exists this like third party company kind of in the middle that's like between the doctor and the insurance company that kind of helps the doctor like get paid, basically like makes it as easy for the doctor's like offices and any other folks there to like do their billing. And so that's what Candid Health does, is we're like kind of trying to like revolutionize that industry a little bit, and like add a bunch of like automation and like other like helpful stuff to like get the doctors paid faster. And so the app that we have is really like the doctor's interface with like what we're doing in our system. you can kind of think about it like how like Stripe really revolutionized like retail. And like, you know, all these little cafes and stuff have like, you know, little Stripe things. And so we want to make it really easy to become like a doctor, maybe doing like telehealth, like call your doctor on Zoom or, you know, whatever, to just like easily spin up, like get connected to insurance companies, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay. So your system is pretty much just like it's a middleman between the, like paying your insurance providers and the doctors, and it's sort of processes payments and like does all the, you know, admin, like accounting exactly. kind of stuff.
Oh. Yeah, it's exactly that. Like our customers are like wanting to make sure that like they get paid as much as possible, as quickly as possible. And we're trying to, on our side, do all the automation to make sure that like claims are succeeding, they're getting paid quickly. We're not getting a lot of like denied claims, that kind of stuff.
Okay, sure. So, okay, next question. How did you come about finding this position at Candid Health, and why did you choose to take up this role overseas as compared to perhaps maybe some similar role in Australia?
Yeah, so some backstory about me. Like when I graduated, I joined Palantir as a forward deployed engineer, so kind of more on the like consulting side of Palantir. And that that role is like what made me originally move to the US. So I like graduated and found that role in the Bay Area. And so I worked there for probably around 4 years in like different kinds of jobs. And then after a while, I like kind of figured out like these are the various things that I like wanted to improve on of my like role. And I like, couldn't necessarily find them in the role that I already had. And so I started looking at other options. And it just so happened that a guy who I'd actually worked with previously at Palantir reached out to me right as I was looking for new jobs, being like, hey, like I have a startup now. Do you know any engineers who would want to join a startup? And I was like, sign me up. And so from there, it was kind of just, you know, I like went through some interviews and got to know the rest of the team. But it felt like pretty organic because I was like already friends with this guy. He'd like managed me in the past. And the team was really small at that point as well. There was only like 5 or 6 people. And so it was like really easy to like get to know everyone and kind of like get on board with what they'd been up to so far.
So was Palantir sort of like the same thing as Candid Health, or was it completely different in terms of like the startup?
Yeah, so Palantir is like a 2,000 or so person company. They do generally like data analytics software. And so they had like a lot of customers that were like healthcare customers, but not, they never like were such a niche, you know, software as like Candid is building. They're like building kind of generalized software for like, yeah, lots of different industries.
Right. So the transition between Palantir to, from Palantir to Candid Health was pretty easy, right? To manage.
Yeah. It was like, at least from like a technical side, you know, it was like very straightforward. And then like from a kind of like business understanding side, there's like a lot of, you know, healthcare lingo that I had to learn.
Right.
Other than that, it was like,
that's fair.
Yeah. Pretty good.
Wow. Okay. So, that's, interesting to know. And, after this, what is it like living in the USA? Specifically, I know you're in Seattle at the moment. What are the differences you find most different compared to Australia?
I have really enjoyed traveling around. Like I said, I like first lived in the Bay Area. I like moved to London very briefly and decided I didn't like London that much, at least not enough to live there long term. And so then after that, I moved to Seattle, and I definitely like Seattle the best of those three places. I think the thing that I like the most is that as far as like American cities, Seattle feels like pretty similar to Sydney. Like there's lots of nature nearby. People are like pretty laid back and like chill compared to like New York or, you know, like busier cities. I think like the thing about living in the US that I've enjoyed the most is kind of just like the change and like get to be a new place and like meet new people, like see new things. Like I really enjoy like traveling. And so it's like been really nice to like go different places that are like close to home rather than like you know, trying to go to the US from Australia for a big road trip is like way more complex than just like driving from your house. I think there's like a lot of cons, obviously, to the US as well. I think like the one of the main ones I would say is like the public transport is like really bad almost everywhere. And so, and like things are further away. Like America is like very car centric of a city. And so it's like hard to get away with like not having a car. There's obviously like a lot of like interesting political issues as well with America that I've just like kind of avoided. But like Australia is kind of a bit more stable feeling in that way as well, I think.
Mm-hmm. So do you mind giving us like a timeline of how many years you spent like in London, mm-hmm. Bay Area, and like now in Seattle? From
yeah, so I was in the Bay Area for like 18 months, I would say, and then in London for a year. And then I think I've now been in Seattle for like 3.5 years. Once I like found Seattle, I was like, this is it, like no more moving.
Yeah, I know.
I was like,
so is Candid Health, is Candid Health based in Seattle? Is that the...
No, it's a remote, I'm remote at least, right. With Candid. So when I was at Palantir had an office in Seattle that I would go into, and then, you know, COVID happened, everyone started working from home. And I was working from home for 9 months before I moved jobs. And I was like, cool, like I've been working remotely already. Like I can keep working remotely, that's fine. Then like, you know, 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, everyone kind of started to go back to the office. And I was like, oh, like it would be cool if I had an office in Seattle. And I don't. And so that's one unfortunate thing about like where I've ended up. Yeah, we have like a New York office, a San Francisco office, and a Denver office. And so we usually try to like, you know, co-locate in one of those three places every now and again to kind of keep the team social going. Most of the company is in one of those three places. There's just like a couple of remote folks.
Yeah, you know, I actually agree with you, like, you know, wanting to settle down in Seattle, because actually, it's on a side note, I recently, you know, went to like Tokyo Japan for a holiday. And of course, you mentioned like New York and whatnot being very busy, because it's almost a bit like Tokyo. There's just so many people and whatnot. And
so you much want going
something
on.
Something more slower paced. Otherwise, you know, you're going to like, it's really like hectic, you know.
I think one of the other things that I like made a conscious decision about doing in Seattle, like when I had lived in the Bay Area and in London, I was always kind of like I wouldn't like buy things because I was like, oh, well, like maybe I'll move back to Australia soon. And then like, I would have to like sell all this stuff. Like I didn't buy a car when I was in the Bay Area. And I think that was like one of my biggest mistakes being there probably. And so when I got to Seattle, I was like, screw it. Like, I'm going to just like live my life normally and like buy things that I want to buy, and like I'll deal with the consequences later if like I do decide to move back to Australia and like need to sell it all or whatever. And so I think like in doing that, I like you know, like worked on a bunch of hobbies that I had like never been able to spend time on and like stuff like that, just because, you know, you like accrue stuff, and if you're like planning to move all the time, like having stuff is like not great. So I've like now got lots of stuff, and I'm like thinking about moving back to Sydney in like the next couple of years. I'm like, okay, this is going to be expensive to move all these things.
Okay, so next question. What is the company workflow and culture like? Are things done differently there to, for example, Australian tech companies?
Yeah, I feel it's probably pretty similar to how things are done in Australia. I'm not like totally sure. I haven't worked in Australia for some time, like 6 or so years. In general, like, you know, we have like product teams, and we're like, you know, working in groups on projects in groups or like individually. We have like a PM and a designer. So I think it's like pretty typical, just like tech company. In general, though, I think there is a bit more of a like work culture in the US compared to in Australia. I've heard the pace can be a bit faster, or like a bit more like go, go, go. Just that like, for some reason, whatever it is, like Americans care more about work than Australians do. And therefore, like Australian work culture, I think is just a little bit more laid back than the US.
Yeah, the laid back country, as they say.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was just wondering, what was the pay like compared to America and Australia?
Yeah, so when I first left Sydney, that was like one of the main reasons for me leaving was like, you know, obviously go to a new country, like see new stuff. But like the pay in the US when I moved was about double what you could get in Australia.
Ooh, yeah, that's a lot.
And so I remember like my at the company that I was working at while I was at uni, I got an offer, I think, for like 85K. At the time, that was like a relatively low offer. But like, I was like, come on, like, I can do better than that. So I like went to the US and like found, I think my first salary in the US was 125K US dollars.
Wow, that's so, like, a lot, yeah.
Even at the time, like when the dollar was like more similar, it was like still almost double, like the 85K that I've got. And like now the US dollar is even more crazy.
Yeah.
Like me coming back to Sydney, like right now, it's like wild, like going to the shops and like doing the maths in my head and being like, well, this like, you know, coffee costs like $2 or whatever it is.
It's really nice. Yeah.
But back to your question, I feel like these days, like in talking to some of my friends, I think it's like a little bit closer to parity. Like some of my friends are making about the same amount that I'm making in US dollars in Australian dollars. But I guess like the difference is that like the dollar is so different right now between US and Australia that like I guess technically like it's still more in the US. Though like, you know, for example, in Australia, like there's superannuation and that's like the government paying extra money that you like don't see, which doesn't exist in the US. And so there's like, it's probably like pretty close. I think the US is still probably like slightly higher, especially when you get into like really big companies and like, you know, really senior positions that, you know, you also get the equity at that point, which is like a whole, you know, big thing of its own.
Wow. Okay. Sure.
I was also wondering, just when you were in London, were you also working, or was it just kind of like?
Yeah.
So how was the?
Yeah. So I moved to London with Palantir.
Oh right. Oh yes. Oh fair.
Mm, yeah.
I actually got a really good. Like it was really good when I moved because I kept my US salary. Like Palantir's policy at the time was that you like would never like get down, like demoted, I guess. And so generally in the UK, like software engineers do not get paid well. Like,
right,
you know, there are software engineers making like, you know, very low amount of money in the UK. And so being a Palantir in the UK was like very nice because it's actually like making a solid amount.
Wow. Okay. Yep. Okay, so now let's move on to our next question. I'm going to hand over to Leo now. So Leo, over to you.
So I was just wondering, what do you remember about UNSW and what do you like about it?
Yeah, so I think my strongest memories of UNSW were like all CSE SOC related, honestly. So that's like part of the reason why when you reached out, I was like, hell yeah. Like, I think I definitely spent like 90% of my time at university, like hanging out in the K17 basement or like the room before that. It was like on level 3. And so like, yeah, doing that, like various social events, I like kind of built my whole friendship network out through CSE. Like all of the friends that I still have today are like people I met at uni. And so I think that's kind of like my fondest memory, I suppose, of just like kind of like having a ton of time, just like hanging out, like working on projects or like doing whatever. I feel like as I've like gotten older, I've had like less spare time. And like during uni, like people have like lots of assignments and stuff, but I also like just have really solid memories of just kind of like lying around and like not really doing anything and like having tons of fun doing that as well, you know.
Yeah, like do you remember like going these barbecues and whatnot? We've got now
our barbecues exactly.
Happens on Wednesday lunches.
Nice. Yeah, my two of my good friends were the like social heads at the time, and so I have like very strong memories of the barbecues.
Outside of CSC SOC, did you have anything else that you did? I also saw that you did some baking. You like baking or?
Yeah. So I think like hobby wise, like I've always been kind of like a maker of sorts. So far as like, I really enjoy the process of like going from nothing to something, like putting lots of things together and then like producing something that's useful. And I think that's actually what I really enjoy about like software engineering as well. It's like kind of like building something and then like having a finished result. And so over the years, as I've like moved around, that has like taken the format of like baking and woodworking and like 3D printing and like a whole kinds of like kind of like build things hobbies. As well as like, I'm also just like a really outdoorsy person. And so, you know, love to get go bushwalking or, you know, kayaking, camping, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, we all have our own interests. Like, I have this bigger interest in like airplanes and like flight sims. And then we've got Leo here, who's like a big badminton.
Yeah, I love my badminton.
You've got your badminton.
Oh, yeah. I also like cooking as well, just because I'm a big foodie. And
yeah,
I like eating like good food. But sometimes I'm not
too it's also like so satisfying when you like learn a skill and you're like your improvement at the skill, and you're like with cooking or baking, you're like, I am like good at this, and like every time I cook food, I like, it's so delicious. It's like so fun to have that experience.
It's very satisfying. Like, instead of like someone else cooks, if you cook it yourself, it actually, I sometimes feel it tastes better.
right
Anyways, so on to next question.
Yeah,
is it worth going overseas for employment? What are the pros and cons to it?
Yeah, so I think there's definitely pros and cons. In my opinion, like, definitely worth it. I think, like, we kind of talked about this, like, the pros are that there's just, like, so many different opportunities in, like, a ton of different industries. So we're, like, in Sydney, like, there are, like, a couple of big companies. There are, like, you know, hundreds of big companies in the US. And so like, whatever you're like really interested in, there like tends to be a tech company that is like focused on that thing. As well as like, you know, I was saying, for someone just like interested in like traveling and seeing the world, like getting paid more to move to another country, like seems like a really good deal to me. So like, you know, after I moved to the US or when I was like in London, like traveling from there, it's like super fun and like seeing more stuff. As well, I would say like, one of the like really nice things about the US is that like most Australians have like a pretty easy time getting a job there, because the visa situation is like pretty straightforward for Australians compared to a lot of other countries. And so like, there's like very little downside. I think like the downside majorly is that you like do kind of end up leaving behind like friends and family. And especially if you have like close connections to those people, like that can be hard. For me, it was not too bad, because I like, a lot of my friends also moved to the US around the same time as me. And so I like did keep a bit of a network even after I'd moved there. But still, like, you know, traveling like 15 hours on a plane to like come back is like not real great. Never the most exciting part of, you know, a Sydney trip. And so it really depends like on who you are and kind of like what you're interested in. I think a lot of people like right out of uni kind of like move away for a while and like, you know, have a lot of experiences, like make some money and then like end up moving back and kind of like settling in back at home. Seems to be pretty popular.
Yeah, I know a few people have done that. Yeah, I agree with your point about like having a more variety of jobs and roles, not just in computer science, but like a whole bunch of like other industries. For example, like,
exactly,
if you like me, like I like programming, but say if I wanted to like program, you know, aircraft avionics, which is just, you know, airplane computer systems, there's pretty much no job.
Right.
You can't do that in Australia. There's like,
exactly.
If I want to like go, but if you like move overseas, you like USA, you've got this opportunity. I might be able to write, you know, programming, for example. I know that these avionics systems, they use like C and C++ because they're very low level memory. They need to be very reliable and whatnot. So, but that wouldn't be possible. To do that, you would pretty much, like 99% chance you would have to go overseas if you wanted to like do something like that.
Yeah. There's just like so many different things that like companies that exist. And like, there is just like many opportunities in the US and like other places in the world as well. Like Sydney is like slowly getting better and better, but just like the population of like Australia, I think it's a little limiting so far as like, you know, the total number of big companies that can ever really exist.
Yeah,
for me as well, I can totally relate, because I'm from New Zealand and it was quite scary for me to travel to a new country for school, because at first I didn't really know anyone. I left all my friends and family back in New Zealand. And it was like a fresh start for me. Was it also scary for you, just going to like a completely new environment? Or are you a quick adapter in that sort?
I think like especially like even just like starting a new job, like wherever it is like always like scary. Like, there's a whole bunch of like new people you have to meet, like figuring out like what the vibe is like with each person and like what your relationship is going to be like. So there's like all of that, and then you're also like in a new place, and so you like also have to like kind of learn what the place's vibe is like. And so I think I was like pretty lucky in that I did have like a couple of friends who I was like living with, and so there was like a solid like Australian vibe like in my life still. there's always like communities that you can find, like especially around like interests and like, you know, where you're from. There's like tons of like Australians in X city like groups in the US. And so like even if you like did move somewhere that like you didn't know anyone there, like it does take work, which is like annoying sometimes, but like, you know, you can find your new network, you know.
Yeah, for me at least, I came to New Zealand, I came to Australia, didn't really know many people, and I kind of found a lot of other Kiwis in the same boat as me.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it was quite nice to relate to them.
Yeah.
And seeing how they're doing compared to me, and yeah, it's quite nice.
Yeah, I think another good point to add is like, since you like going from Australia to the US or UK is quite, or Canada as well, is quite easy, because like, of course, you're going from like a place which is like all English to another place which is all English. But I know some people like, if they like transition from somewhere from like Australia to somewhere like Japan or like
right.
you know, in a non-English speaking country or South Korea, then that's going to be a lot even more challenging. Then you're going to have to grasp a language and different culture that's like,
right.
like at least in the US, it's, I mean, it is a bit different, but you're still speaking English. It's still pretty similar. Like,
exactly.
Things yeah, run similar.
Yeah, the biggest difference is that like you really learn, there's all these like words in like Australian vocabulary that like you don't realize are Australian words
like,
and not English words.
Yeah, they call like
it's like really funny.
Yeah, it's like, for example, I know one is like capsicum, we call capsicum, that's bell pepper. And then like
right, exactly.
coriander, cilantro, a whole bunch of things.
And then like tomato.
Yes, and then
yeah.
chop, yeah,
yeah.
stuff like that.
And then they call the foot
it was really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, my girlfriend, who's American, we took a trip to New Zealand last year. And we were like in a cafe and she ordered a caramel slice to go, and I heard her order and I was like, you're an idiot, because she was like ordering a caramel slice takeaway.
Yeah.
But like, you know, same vibe, like same intention, but just like different words, and like the person, you know, at the cafe gave her this look like, who are you, like what are you doing here? And so there, it's like it can be fun to like kind of like learn the new culture. I definitely like slip into a lot more like Americanisms now that I've been in America for so long.
Yeah, I can tell.
Really
yeah.
depends like who's listening to me, like what I sound like, you know.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll move on to the next question. So, what was your first IT job like, and how'd you get it?
Yeah, so my very first tech job was at a company called Freelancer in Sydney. So I like had an internship there after my second year of uni. And then like after the internship finished, it kind of converted into a part-time job. So it's like pretty good fun. It was like definitely laid back, like company not without its problems, but like it was a really good like starting experience in like the tech industry, and like gave me a lot of like things to consider, you know, like what was I like wanting to do? I was like a back-end dev at Freelancer, and kind of was like, oh, well, like that team over there doing front-end stuff, like looks like they're doing cool things. And like that kind of gave me some direction in what I wanted to do next as well. So then like, you know, by the time I graduated, I like really understood like kind of how the industry, I mean, as so far as like 2 years in the industry can get you, like understood how the industry worked, like what kind of positions there were, like how companies operated, which I think gave me like a good, you know, like head start in moving to the US versus like some new grads who like might not have like had, you know, workplace experience.
Yeah, I just, out of curiosity, I know like this was like your first job, like coming out of like, you know, like, you know, the uni environment, you like, you know, uni's of course like you're learning by yourself, but obviously you've got your lectures, tutors or whatnot to help you. How do you find that transition from like going from having a lot of support at like university to like, you know, going out and like sitting, like, you know, actually doing something for like a real project in the real world? Did they like give you any kind of head start or support, or did they just give you a task and they just expected you to like jump right into it?
Yeah, different companies definitely have different approaches. Generally, like, the larger the company, the more support there is, like, available. And so Palantir's approach to, like, you know, new grad onboarding was kind of the, like, throw you in the deep end way and, like, hope that you kind of, like, figure it out. And so I, like, very quickly got put on a team. The team did have, like, a couple of other devs on it, and so, like, I was definitely like kind of the junior, like looking at them for like advice and like learn from them as we like went through problems or like wanted to develop stuff. And then like over time, as I like kind of grew, you know, you just like start to understand how it works more and more. You don't need so much, you know, oversight or mentorship. But definitely, you know, especially in my like first couple of jobs, I did always feel. You know, like there's sufficient mentorship that, that if I like did run into problems, I like had someone who could I could ask at least, even if they weren't like necessarily proactive at helping me, like there was someone at least there.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Yeah, so yeah, so I guess so what do you think like the biggest thing like you felt like the trend between what was the biggest thing that you felt between transitioning from like a university learning environment to like actual workforce?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I feel like the university learning environment, like never, I was like definitely, I wasn't like an A student at UNSW. I like spent a lot of time kind of just like hanging out and like not working. And so I was definitely like, when I like started working at a big company and like you start to have real like, you know, priorities and like deadlines and things like that. That was like a bit of a shock to me just because like, you know, it's actually important that you like finish the thing on time. And if it's like a couple of days late, like it's not like 20% off. It's like, you know, the customer isn't happy and like, you know, it's less like logical and more emotional, like feeling bad about it. I think as well, like a lot of the stuff at uni can be like pretty theoretical. And like the reality is like working like in the, you know, workforce is like actually like super practical. Like there's a lot of like consideration over like what is the best approach for things, like, you know, how should we like build this thing? Whereas like I feel like what you learn at uni really, or at least what I learned at uni, with more of the like hard skills of like, you know, algorithms or, you know, data structures or whatever, not so much like, you know, here is an ambiguous problem and like how do you solve it. And so that's like also an interesting skill you kind of develop as you work more, is like the kind of like very high level like problem decomposition versus just like, you know, write a code, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's like very different. You're not just writing code just to like fulfill, like, you know, submit an assignment off. You're actually like doing it for somebody who wants to actually get a solution to actual, like, you know, they actually want to solve a problem or something like that instead of
it's like solve this problem that like has no, there's like no good solution necessarily. You're like, there's like 80% good solutions and you have to like kind of think through which one makes the most sense. Maybe one is like gonna be faster, one it's gonna be better long term, and you like have to do the trade-offs, whereas a lot of the time at uni it's just like, okay, you're gonna like write this algorithm, this programming language, and like here is like whether it works or not, like binary yes or no. And it tends to be like more vague, I think, than that in the industry.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, okay.
So next question, how has your career progressed over time?
Yeah, I would say, so I started off at Freelancer, like I was saying, as an intern, and then part-time. In my like third year, I think, of uni, I did like a four-year CS degree. I like I said, I like failed some math courses. I like worked a bit part-time, so I like kind of extended. So I also worked at this kind of small web dev agency called 2PyCode towards the end of my time at uni. So graduating, moved to Palantir. Kind of the reason for moving to Palantir, not only was like moving to the US, but at the time in the like web dev agency, I kind of ended up being like one of the more skilled people at the company. It was like very small company, mostly uni students. And so I really wanted to like get more of that mentorship and like grow technically. A lot of the issues I was running into were like, you know, I would make a mistake and then 3 months later on the project, like the mistake that I made would like come back to bite me. And if I just like had another person around that was like more knowledgeable, they could just like point out the mistake as soon as I made it and be like, that's a bad decision, like don't do that. And so Palantir is definitely like the primary like growing from like 0 to 1, I think, that I did as like a software engineer. And then like with that information, now that I like truly kind of knew like where the next place that I wanted to grow was, that was where like kind of came in. Like I wanted like to have more impact on, you know, the projects I was working on, get a bit more like breadth in the actual like technology we're using, and then also like grow in my kind of soft skills as well. Palantir was really good for like, yeah, like writing code, building features, that kind of thing. But I didn't learn a lot about like, you know, how do businesses work and like how to like engineering priorities and business priorities kind of like align or not align. You know, whenever I like disagreed with what we were working on, I like didn't really have a case to make because I like didn't understand how we were picking what we were doing. And so I really have like gotten that out of Canada, I think, and like learned kind of more on the like strategic, you know, prioritization kind of thing.
Wow, that's a nice little, nice quick career. So, so could you like quickly again, like what was the year you got your first like job at Freelancer?
Yeah, so in I was in second year in 2014. So it would have been the summer between 2014 and 2015. So
probably
November, December there.
Yeah.
And then I ended up working at Freelancer for, I think, 2 years. So I like did one internship, then like worked part-time all through the following year, full-time through the summer of my third year. And then that was when I like made the transition to 2PyCode, which was the web agency.
Yeah.
Would you suggest doing like a commerce with like a comp sci double degree, or kind of depends on what you're after?
Yeah, I think it depends on what you're after. Like I don't think that I would have done well doing a commerce degree. I just like I'm not the like in the right mindset of like, you know, the analytical kind of perspective. But I do think that like suddenly like understanding the business side and like how businesses work and like you know, helped me as, or has helped me like as an engineer to like make better decisions. It might be the kind of thing where like you kind of want to know, like you want to understand what you don't know before you learn it. I feel like if I like was in first year like doing a commerce degree, I'd be like, I don't understand the like practicality of like how this is useful in like you know, the like tech field. Whereas like now, you know, if I like really wanted to get into it, I could go back and do like a master's or something and like actually like get deeper into it. I know a lot of people who do like, if they want to become like startup co-founders or that kind of thing, like they do go back and like kind of get some more like professional tuition in the like business side of things rather than just like, you know, knowing about the tech side of things.
Yeah, I think, because I do know like a quite a popular route in like, you know, in Australia IT is that I know a lot of like friends who are like, they like want to do the comp sci and commerce degree. Like they're thinking that the comp sci will obviously give them the technical like background to be able to like work with like computers and software, whatnot. And then they think the commerce side of things can help them get into like finance. And a lot of the times the target role is that they want to like go work in the banking system. Like, you know, for example,
right.
Like they want to go for like ANZ or like, Commonwealth Bank and like program the, you know, financial like banking systems and stuff. So I know that's a traditional route.
Yeah.
And then there are people who like don't want to do that. They just might want to just do the comp sci thing just one at a time, and then they just want to see how they go. And then they might realize, oh, I do want to go like work in a commerce.
Right, exactly.
Thing. And sometimes that, like, no, I don't want to. I just want to do like algorithmic stuff, or maybe even just like pure like, you know, CPU or like compilers or something.
Yeah, there's definitely like I feel like a popular track of people doing like commerce and comp sci is like high speed trading and like those kinds of companies, which is like, if you're into that and like really into algorithm, I am aware it's like extremely lucrative, like financially.
Yeah.
Just like kind of crazy hours and like work-life balance. But I think that's like, I don't know, more common on the finance side than like on the tech side. But there's definitely like yeah, some solid kind of like parts of the like tech spectrum that are like a good crossover with a commerce degree.
Okay, yeah, sure. That sounds great, yeah.
So now we have Dylan carry on the next couple of questions.
Yeah. I just want to ask you, what do you feel makes you stand out from the rest of the IT industry, and what is the most attractive skill you can offer?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like at this point, it's like kind of the like breadth of experience that I've had. So like, you know, I've been at a company that's like pretty big, kind of like seeing problems that like, you know, big code bases have. One of the like problems I worked on at Freelancer was that we had like, you know, more than 100 different Git repos that we were trying to like merge all into the same repo. And like, that is not a problem that like small companies ever like tackle, but it's like a really interesting problem that like gives you, you know, information. I think, like the experience as well, like on the startup side and like planning, and like planning also under different constraints, you know, when you're in a really big company, often you're planning for like the perfect solution and then you have the time to like go and build the perfect thing. Whereas at a startup, typically, you know, you might plan the perfect solution and then you only have, you know, 3 weeks to build it. And so you like also plan based on the perfect solution, what a like 50% good solution is, and go and build that instead. And so I think like that kind of understanding of the prioritization is like a really good skill that I have. I would say like maybe my other like attractive skill is just like the ability to go pretty quickly from like an idea into a solution, particularly as like a full stack dev, like doing the like planning and, you know, working with design and then like prototyping something up is like something I always receive like quite a lot of praise for, just like the speed in like getting anything. And then once you have something, then it's easy to like iterate on it. But like often people like don't understand what you're talking about until you can like put an app in front of them or, you know, a new feature or whatever and be like, you know, this is why this is helpful, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm. Would you say you practice your skills a lot? Just if you're not working, would you say you would be doing like a lot of other stuff just to practice? Or
so, yeah, sometimes I get into like some side projects. It depends on my mood at the time. I have kind of like a roller coaster of like, sometimes I'll get like really excited about something and then I'll like, you know, work on it for a little while and like lose interest and then like never touch it again. I think it tends to be like the things that are interesting for me and not so much like improving skills that I already have, but like learning new things, or like maybe learning like new features or like patterns of like, you know, stuff that I already do know. Right. And so like an example is recently I got like really interested in like web animation. Like I've always been a front end dev, but I've never like understood, you know, those like crazy Apple websites where like, you know, the iPhone is like flipping around.
Yes, they like to market the product and
how do they make those things? And I like kind of went and like figured out like, you know, how all the like frameworks work for like building websites with a lot of motion in them, which was just like really interesting for me. Not like a skill that I have ever had or like might ever use, but like kind of fun and like a good way for me to like practice up on like what is the latest in like, you know, technology as well.
Yeah.
I was wondering, when did you start doing side projects? Did you start doing them in uni or was it just when you started working? Or
I'm trying to remember. I think I probably had some like really, really bad side projects when I was in high school. I don't think it was really until uni where like I actually started to like learn the skills that I like could like make fun side projects, and like also like the skills to like think about what like interesting things would be. Like one project I remember making in uni was you know, like the, you can like view the weather online, like the radar weather. But like you can never view like a full history of like what the radar was like over all of time. Mm-hmm. And so I like built this like thing where it would like save the like all of the different pictures of the radar like every, you know, day or whatever they were put up. And then you could like scroll through it back and forth and like, you know, see like the storms come through, and it was like pretty cool. It's just like also the ability to like, I really liked that about uni, and that there was a lot of time kind of just sitting around being like, what should we do now? Like, you know, what's like the fun thing to spend time on? And like, that like had a lot of creativity for me as far as like those kind of side projects.
Yeah.
Sorry, last question. I was just wondering, for side projects, is it good to do side projects to kind of build up your portfolio? So when companies look at who you are as a person, like what you've done, it's more like, more kind of attractive to like the companies that try to employ you?
Yeah, it definitely depends on the type of company. I think like across the board, the most useful thing about side projects is less like that you have actually built the thing and more like the skills that you like gain like while you're working on them, especially when they're like projects where you like don't know what the solution is when you start. Like you have to like learn how to do this skill and then learn how to do that skill to like get to the end. And then by the time that you're interviewing, you like have the understanding of all the skills. Like even if you're not like a master, when someone's asking about it, you like can kind of tell them what you know about it rather than just being like, I've never heard of this thing, I don't know what that is. There's definitely some companies, especially for new grads, where like having those like personal projects does give you like a bit of an upper hand, because it's like proof that, you know, the person isn't just really good at coding interviews, like they're actually, you know, can produce full things. But some companies, you know, never look at them, and some companies do. So really, it depends.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, okay, definitely.
I think we should move on to the next question.
Yep.
What hobbies, projects, passions, and aspirations do you have on the side?
Yeah, so I kind of mentioned the maker, like in me, the, you know, baking, etc. Like outdoors, definitely, for sure. I think there's like a lot of, I could see a lot of versions of me that like took different career paths. You know, when I was in high school, another career that I was looking at was like as a, what's it called? I forget what exactly, it's kind of like a product designer, like physical products. And like, you know, it would be cool to be like the guy who makes the mouse, or like the guy who like designs the AirPods, or, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, the version of me now, like getting really into baking, I'm like, oh, like maybe I should have been a baker and like a bakery for my life. And so I feel like one of the nice things about computer science is like, you do, maybe not on like baking or, you know, product design, but like you do get to explore quite a lot of different fields. You know, like I'm doing a lot of healthcare stuff right now, you know, you could do a lot of finance stuff. So there's kind of the ability to like move around a lot. And so that's like one of the things I like a lot, just like, even if you're, whatever you're interested in, usually there's like tech adjacent to that thing. And so that's kind of like, you know, relatively long term, you know, a couple years time, I'm like hoping that I can find like, you know, some really difficult problem that exists in like the bakery world that can be solved by tech, or like, you know, something like that. So I can kind of like combine my hobbies and still, you know, be a software engineer on the technical side, but like, you know, be really like investing in something that I care about personally, you know?
Yeah, that's really true. For example, like, you know, I learned that in my flight simulator, of course, it's like, there's a lot of like computer code behind like how all the simulations and like the fluid dynamics it runs, like, and then I think having this like computer science like interest, it's inspired me to like have a look into like the app and whatnot. And then I've learned that like I use this flight simulator called X-Plane. It's the program. And then I looked into it, the developer, and then it turns out they use a lot of the scripts that are used, they use a lot of Lua, of course. And then since it's a 3D program, of course, it's sort of like similar to gaming and stuff. They use a lot of C++. And then you realize, well, you can actually this aerospace thing, and actually it's all like interlinked, and then you can like apply one thing to another.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it all just kind of like connects up, and you, at the end of it, you're like, you start of it, you're like, how does this thing work? And then you're like, oh, maybe I should like go build like a plane simulator or something else, just to like see what it's like and like learn from, you know, how they've done it.
Would you say doing something that you like combined with programming and stuff like that is like the end goal, or would you say like the more pay is also kind of important as well?
I think that's kind of, there's two different people types of people. I think some people are like very focused on just like maximizing like money, and like, you know, you can maximize money and make a ton of money and then you don't even have to think about working. Like if you do a good enough job, you're just like, cool, I'm gonna retire and I'm like 40 and like, you know, live my life like a king. And then there's like, I feel like I'm the kind of person where like I really want to aim for like a place where like I have a ton of fun working. And like, I like get up in the morning and I like really want to work in this place. And so I'm like happy. And I feel like that is like, I'm like happy to earn less money if I can achieve that thing. I haven't found that thing yet. I've like, you know, found like bits and pieces of it over time. And I'm like still figuring out, you know, for myself, like what are the components in a job that like, you know, are most ideal to index on to find this, you know, kind of like white whale of a job. You know, I think, yeah, it really depends. And there's opportunities for like both kinds of people. You know, you can join a really big company and just like shoot all the way up the ladder, or you can like join smaller companies, kind of like check out different options, you know, explore. And so the second one is kind of the path I've been taking, I think.
Fair.
Yeah.
All right, I just wanted to ask, how do you feel about how you've changed as a person from leaving university until now? And where do you feel you can, what do you feel you are compared to where you want to be?
Yeah, this is a difficult question. I think like when I was at uni, I basically had a single goal, which was like move to the US and like work in tech. And like as soon as I, you know, graduated and got my job, I was like within 2 months of like having moved to the US, I was like, damn, like my goal is complete. Like, what do I do now? And I think it like took me a long time to kind of like realize for myself that like I don't actually necessarily always need to have a goal, and that like actually being satisfied with like what is like going on right now is like its own kind of goal, I guess. It's like pretty difficult to just like be like happy where you are and like not be like looking at other people and being like, oh, like I should be doing what they're doing. So I think like the university version of John would probably be like pretty blown away looking at what I have gotten up to. Like, I don't think I could have ever predicted that like my life would turn out this way. But like, all that said, I think like, kind of like I was saying, the next theme of my life is like trying to figure out how to give myself like more like mental energy and like time to invest more in things I like care personally about. So like, kind of like I was saying about, you know, US work culture versus Australian work culture, like I want to try to like minimize as much like energy as I'm putting in and like find the thing that I'm like really happy about. And so also just like, you know, friendships, hobbies, et cetera, like super important to me, and like trying to like figure out how to optimize them over work as well, you know.
All right, so it's like important to like keep a balance between work and...
Exactly.
Yeah, have fun too, of course, they say, like... You know, I know some
I think when I was younger, it was like easier to just like put my head down and be like, yeah, this is worth it for the money. And then as I've like gotten older, I'm like, okay, well, like every time I like want to, you know, do something else, I'm like distracted by work or, you know, whatever else. And so trying to figure out, you know, what the right balance is exactly. Maybe it's like working less. Maybe it's working on something I'm more excited about, you know, whatever the thing may be. Mm-hmm.
All right, do you mind telling us how many, is it like how many hours you work a day, or is it just like a 9-to-5 job, or is it like kind of projects that you just work on like gradually?
Yeah, so it's basically, my job is like basically a 9-to-5. Like occasionally there's like more time where we have like some tight deadlines, or, you know, some like free time if we've like just passed some deadlines, and then we all have you know, a bit of like relaxation time. I think that something I've like had trouble with is even if it really is 9-to-5, being able to like, you know, at 5 o'clock, like put my computer down, like close the lid, and like be completely mentally like in a personal, you know, space. It's the like transition between work and like, you know, not work can be difficult. And so, you know, hopefully I can like make some changes in my life and improve, you know, kind of the way that I approach work and solve that problem, I would say.
Yeah, because as in like uni, you know, you might have like a lot of
assignments due, and you kind of need to like work overtime. But as in work, like if you work 9 to 5, it's just you finish at 5, and then from like
exactly
5 till whenever you can chill, watch Netflix.
Or, yeah, like a ton of free time. Yeah. Exactly. And then, yeah, you're not always like worried about like, oh shit, well like that assignment is due like next week, and so like maybe I should work on it this weekend.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, the weekend, that's my like time to do whatever I want. I know, like, I have no other plan.
Yeah, I know, there's like people, there's a whole bunch of like, everyone's different. I think I also know some people that maybe like they even on the weekend, they still want to, you know, keep working because either number one, they just really like it, or number two, they really want to like, I think maybe gain an edge over the other employees. Like then you can tell your boss, hey, I've done this ahead of time, or I worked more, and maybe the boss might be like, yeah, that's good or something like that.
Yeah, it definitely like I have had moments for sure where like I'm so excited and like enthralled by the thing that I'm doing where I'm like, it's 7 p.m. like I've already been working 2 extra hours and like I don't even care because like I really want to figure this thing out. And that's those are the times where like work really transitions into like fun for me, where like it's just like so exciting that I would be working on this thing as a personal project if it wasn't like a work project, to like figure out how to like do this thing that I like, this problem that I can't solve, or you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's the ultimate. And
exactly, the ultimate goal of like, if I can make like my entire job have that feeling of being like so excited and like I wish I could do this thing and like I'll just go and do that and like whatever, then that's exactly what I'm aiming for.
Yeah, that's the exact win-win situation. Like, you know, if like you want, this is like what the company wants to like solve, is this what you want to solve personally too, and you have enjoying it, and that's like great because number one, you're enjoying and you're also getting money at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
All right, we'll just move on.
Okay.
Finally, what advice would you give to the current UNSW undergraduate students at CS?
Yeah, so I think this is, I guess, being a theme. I think my biggest thing that I would say is like to make sure that you're enjoying the like day to day of like being at uni. Like, you know, I had like a pretty average path through uni. Like, I failed every math course that I did. Like, my WAP was no good when I graduated, and like it was fine. Like, I still, you know, moved to the US. I still ended up with good jobs. And so like, it's okay if you're not like the perfect student and like not something to like get yourself down over. I think like what is more important is like, yeah, having the like meeting the connections, like having the like new social groups, like whatever else that you're like going to build for, you know, the rest of your life. I think one like specific thing is like, it's very easy to measure yourself against other people around you and be like, oh, like, cool, I'm like getting 80s on all of my tests, and like my friends are getting 99s, and like I'm really bad. And like maybe you can improve, but like also like it often like doesn't really matter. And like it depends on, you know, all types of different skills that you both have, like it's gonna end up with having you in different places. Overall, I would just say like make sure that you're spending your time like wisely, you know, socializing, like not paying too much, like not like trying too hard to like get the 99s versus like get a 95 and like have a couple of extra hours, you know, that kind of thing. Like once you graduate, all of the like networking and friend finding and like socialization just becomes like a little bit harder because you're not like always in the same place with everyone else like every day. And so, you know, the like important part of university for me was more of that than like, you know, getting the 99 or whatever.
Yeah, I feel like when you mentioned like measuring yourself against others, like you know, against people around you. Actually, at CSC Media, we actually recently did a podcast, or we will be doing. We have another project that's about insecurities in computer science, like people, like people who are like a bit worried about like. Just having that feeling everyone's better than you, imposter syndrome, like just like you're sitting in a room and you think, oh my god, all these people must be like real, they're like they're like a genius in like programming. And well, then it turns out like we were looking at a few responses, and it turns out a lot of people actually feel this way. And so yeah, you make this really great point that we just want to try to be ourselves and like like, I mean, you can like know what other people are doing, but you don't have to worry too much or like get overly like nervous exactly. about what everyone else is doing and all that. So just like be yourself is the message.
Yeah, and I think like that same feeling, like if you don't like get a handle on it, like continues throughout your career. You know, there are other people who you know who are like earning more money than you, or like have better work-life balance, or you know, whatever. There's, you know, infinite numbers of metrics to like compare yourself to other people, and like once you can like better recognize like that your paths are different, and like they don't have to be the same. You don't have to like be doing the same thing as that person, then it's all like a little bit easier to manage. I should write a self-help book. I sound like a life coach right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel, I think we're coming to the end of this session. It's been that's been a great discussion with you today, John. We've really enjoyed the time to like get to know you a bit, like get to know like what it's been like for you overseas, how your career and like work-life balances, and most importantly, like what you think, what you like recommend, what you recommend new and fresh CS students should do, and perhaps like think about in the future. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. It's been fascinating to learn more about the intricacies of being an expat in the IT industry.
Yeah, no worries. I feel like happy to chat to anyone who does have more questions about moving overseas or anything like that. If there's a lot, maybe we can set up, you know, some aggregated Q&A or something like that. But happy to keep chatting in the future.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Okay, everyone, we have all been intrigued about the prospects of traveling overseas, and perhaps some of us are inspired to make a difference in the future. So thank you everyone for joining us again on CSE SOC Media, and we hope to see you again soon.
Bye.
Bye.